Hi, I'm Pastor Sandy Shear. Thank you so much for joining us for the Guts Church podcast. This week, we have the privilege to hear from Pastor Bill. The message was produced with you in mind, and we would love to hear your story of how God is showing himself faithful in your life. Share your story by emailing story@gutschurch.com.
So the title of my message is Turn to God. Pretty simple, pretty easy, but I think we forget that. It's whether we're turning to him for the first time or we're turning to him for the 100th time, there's always these moments in life where it's like, I just gotta turn to God. And I think we forget sometimes. We either get comfortable or thinking, we have this thing figured out, I know what I'm doing, and we forget that it's like the answer is turn to God. That's it, and there's so many seasons in life. There's so many seasons, whether it's, you know, high school and college, and what am I gonna do with my life, and getting married and having kids. And my wife reminded me of, we were driving this rental car, and she said, this would be a great car for Isabel. And I'm like, she's 12. Like, she wouldn't want to be thinking about cars. This is my baby. She's little. But I just started, in my mind, I imagined, what kind of dad am I going to be like when my 16-year-old starts driving her own car? Like it started to hit me. But there's these seasons, and every time we just turn to God. No matter if it's difficult, if it's easy, if it seems like something big or something small, the answer is that we turn to God. And so, and the reason why is I heard this message, and it was like a 2 or 3 minute excerpt on YouTube from a guy that I like to listen to, and his whole little 2 or 3 minutes was just on that God is better. And it stuck with me. I hear a lot of messages. I hear a lot of stuff, and I couldn't get that out of my head. God is better. I think if people will remember that, if you'll let that sink into your heart, whatever kind of tries to distract you or get you off course, if you'll just remember that God is better, it helps us turn to him every time. It helps us turn to him. Why? Because it doesn't matter the situation or the circumstance, God is better. God is absolutely better. So here's how we normally start. In Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 2, kind of gives us a little bit of insight. I'm going to read two different translations here. But the first one says, I remember the devotion of your youth. I remember the devotion of your youth, your love as a bride, how you followed me in the wilderness in a land not sown. And the New Living Translation says, I remember how eager you were to please me as a young bride. So remember these moments when we first gave our life to God. It doesn't matter how old you were, just those first moments where you were just so eager to please God. There was just such a devotion in your youth. I remember I wasn't raised in the church. So I remember when I first gave my life to the Lord, I was like, I have to learn so much. I mean, every message, I felt like I couldn't take enough notes. And I remember I got to know every story. I didn't know much about David and Goliath. I didn't know much about Moses. I didn't know much about Joseph. I knew a little bit just from being raised in American culture, but I didn't know the stories. And I just thought, I got to get to know the stories. I got to understand God. I got to get to know God. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to get to every service that I can. I'm going to write notes in every message. Why? Because there was such a devotion. And I think sometimes we lose that. And the best example for me is sometimes when you're dating. When you're dating, I mean, there's just something about, it's like you have these, I'm not creative at all. That's not me. Like if there's creative bones they find in your body, I don't have them. And I remember thinking, we're in college and my wife and I have been dating 6 months and I had never dated anybody 6 months. So I was like, God has changed my life. This is amazing. But I was a college student and had not $0, but close to $0. And I thought, 6 months is like a big one, I guess. Like we've been dating 6 months. What am I gonna do? And I just remember thinking, I'm gonna write a 6 month story. I'm gonna be creative. It's gonna be fun, it's gonna be cool. And I'm gonna end it with this story that I know she'll never forget. It's one of those stories that kind of marks our relationship. We've been dating about 5 months. And we were hanging out at a park, just talking and goofing around. And I saw some monkey bars. And I thought to myself, we should have a monkey bar race, right? Because that's fun, that's cute, and I'm competitive. I like winning, so let's do this, right? So we get up on the monkey bars. And you remember being young, you know? And you could just dominate these monkey bars, right? And I remember especially that I was always really good. I could jump out like 3 bars. I could jump out there, I'm gonna get that head start, and I'm gonna win because this is cute, but I have to win because losing isn't an option, right? So we get up on these monkey bars and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna count to three and then we're gonna go. Ready, set, 1, 2, 3, and we go. And I jump out 3 bars like I've always done as a kid. But I'm a little bigger than I was as a kid, come to find out. And my weight just keeps swinging up. And I'm thinking, well, when do I go to the next bar? Like I'm coming in this direction. And then I think my hands are sweaty. Maybe I was nervous. I liked her so much, I was nervous. And I literally fall off the monkey bars onto my back. What do you do? There's no recovering. So I jumped up because I'm tough, right? She goes, are you okay? And I was like, no. Like, I can't breathe. I got a pain in my chest. Like, the good news is she didn't finish, so I feel like that's an unfinished race, so I didn't necessarily lose because she jumped down to make sure. But I thought it was cool because I was like, she laughed at me. As weird as I am, as crazy and competitive as I am, she still liked me. It didn't matter that I fell. It didn't matter that I made a total goof of myself. There is just something about you're willing to do, jump out three bars. There's a devotion in our youth sometimes that we're not supposed to lose. But sometimes we do along the way. Why? Because stuff happens. You know, we have four kids. It's not as easy to get out and to be creative and do more things. But I'm telling you, it's worth the fight. It's worth the fight of remembering that devotion of our youth to our spouses, but to God. Remembering that when he saved us from whatever it was, whatever your situation, your story is, God saved you from something. If he hasn't, I'm going to give you an opportunity at the end of the service. But I remember that just being lost, not knowing I remember I was about 18 years old and just thinking there's got to be more. And I remember hearing Jesus and hearing the story and just thinking, this is what I want to give my life to. This is what I've always been looking for, that I couldn't find in everything else I was trying. And just remembering that he saved us. I think that helps us when new people come into the church, because we're thinking, I was rough. Like, if I would have walked into church, how would people have looked at me? I didn't know to raise my hand. I didn't know to have a Bible. I didn't know to take notes. I didn't know anything. I was just coming in as this kid looking for something more. And people they accepted me. And they helped me. They led me. Something happens. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 5. Something happens. Thus the Lord. So this is, you know, God speaking through Jeremiah to his people. He says, what wrong did your fathers find in me? What wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? What wrong? And I think God, because he's a father, at the end of the day, he's a good father who loves us. And as a dad, you just know you loved your kids. You're thinking, what did I do wrong? It's kind of what God's saying. He's like, what did I do to get your fathers to turn from me? What happened? What did I do? Because I think so many times it's not God, it's us. It's we turned. It's we started to walk away. And God's looking, thinking, what did I do? What did I do? But something happens. Something distracts us. Something else grabs our attention. And we kind of just turn to God. And it leaves God thinking, what did I do? What did I do that made your fathers turn from me? And then how do we respond? After something happens, how do we respond? Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13 says this. For my people have done two evil things. One, they have abandoned me, the fountain of living water. So here we have this fountain of living water. We have this that we can turn to, and this water doesn't run out. But God's saying, they abandoned me. They turned to something else. So the first thing that they did wrong was they abandoned him. The second thing says, and they have dug for themselves cracked cisterns that can hold no water at all. So the first is they abandoned me, right? The living water. And then they turned to something that can't hold water. Literally, they turned to these things called cisterns. They put in the ground and it held water. And they're saying, you're trading God, the living water, for something that actually can hold no water. It's cracked. It's broken. It's not the answer. But so often we're just throwing water into thinking, this is going to work. This is going to work. It's not. It's broken. If it's not Jesus, it literally doesn't work. And I think we get so confused and so lost. And God's showing us, he's saying, like, listen, I have this living water. I have this thing that you can turn to, and it won't run dry. But so often we want to turn to something else. And it's broken. It's cracked. It won't do the job. You may feel okay for a month or two, 6 months, but eventually you're going to realize, I need something else. Why? Because it's a broken cistern. It can't hold the water. It can't hold what you need. Water is huge. Water is, as we're getting ready to climb Pikes Peak a couple weeks ago with the interns, our guide said, 3 days before you go on this hike, you need to start drinking half your weight in ounces of water every day. I'm not going to tell you how many ounces I had to drink, but it was a lot, okay? So I'm just chugging water and going to the restroom, because I guess that's what you do when you drink water all the time. But I was literally thinking, I drink 2 cups a day. Isn't that enough? He's like, not at all. He's like, if you train like crazy for this, but you don't have enough water in your system, you won't make the climb. And I thought, that's crazy. I could train and train and train, but if I'm not hydrated, if I don't have the right water in my system, it doesn't matter. I won't make it to the top of the mountain. We have to have that source of living water. It doesn't matter how much we think we've done on the exterior. If we don't have that water in us, we don't make it to the top of the mountain. Like, it doesn't happen. So I want to remind you guys, like, he's saying, listen, they abandoned me. They turned from this living water, and they turned to something that's broken. They turned to something that can't hold water. And I think all the time we think this is something bad, but sometimes this broken cistern is something good. Like, let's just take success. The Bible talks about success. Success can be a good thing when God's your source and he's number one. But sometimes when the source becomes the thing, when success becomes the thing we're chasing, that's a broken cistern. When success is the thing you're running after, that can't hold water. Eventually you'll realize, I need something else. This isn't holding the water. This isn't giving me what I thought it would give me. And so here's what I want to show you guys today, that the enemy is conniving. The enemy, he's smooth. He finds a way to get us to turn from living water and abandon God and turn to something that cannot hold water. In Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 and 11, here's what the word says. In the New Living, it says, a final word, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on all of God's armor so that you will be able to stand firm against all strategies of the devil. So if you're wondering, the devil has a strategy, but we got a fortress, we got a shield. All we got to do is put on the armor of God and we're protected. All we got to do is turn to God. But what you need to realize is the enemy has a strategy. And in the New King James Version, it says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. So I hear the word wiles, and I think of a character in a show that I used to love watching. And that character's name was Wile E. Coyote. I don't know if you guys ever watched this cartoon known as The Roadrunner. And the Wile E., he was smooth. He was always creative. He was always doing these things. But no matter what he did, no matter how sneaky or wily he was, he couldn't catch the Roadrunner. He couldn't do it. I feel like when we turn to God, that's us. We get to be the Roadrunner. Like literally the enemy is planting trap after trap after trap. And as long as we're turning to God, we're good. Man, those explosions happen. They don't get us. They fall back on his head. That was always my favorite. Someone fly up and land on his head. I'm like, got him. But just remembering that. Here's the definition of wile. Devious or cunning strategies employed in manipulating or persuading someone to do what one wants. Skill in outwitting. The devil is literally just trying to outwit you. He's just trying to find a way to get you to turn to something broken and cracked that cannot hold water. That's it. That's what he's doing. Well, we got to realize his strategies, and we got to know that he's wily, and we got to know these things, and we got to know that we're protected. All we got to do is put on that armor of God. All we got to do is turn to God, and we sang songs talking about, like, he's our fortress. Man, when you're in a fortress, you're safe. He's our fortress. We got to remember that. But in essence, we got to turn to God. We can't get so self-reliant that we quit turning to God. I'm good, God. I got this figured out. You've cleaned me up enough. I know what I'm doing. I just want you to know you never get to the point where you have to quit turning to God. It doesn't happen. We don't outgrow God in our Christianity. We remain Christians because we continue to turn to God. Please know that. Please remember that. No matter how long you've been a Christian or how short you've been a Christian, that our job and our heart is that we're always turning back to him. Let's talk a little about strategies from the enemy. We can read in Genesis chapter 3. So right out of the gates, first book of the Bible, the enemy's coming in. He is coming in. He's trying to deceive and he's trying to just create issues. So the first thing the enemy will do is he'll try to question the word that's in you. He's going to try and question that word that God's put on the inside of you. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 3, it says, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? So now he's questioning the word that she's heard. She knows this. She knows what God said, but the enemy's questioning. He's going to do that so often in your life. You're going to hear a word from God, and you're going to know what you're supposed to do, or you're going to read something. It's going to make sense, and you're going to know what you're supposed to do, but the enemy's going to come in, and what he's going to try and do is to try and convince you that, you know, are you sure you heard that? Are you sure that's right? Are you sure? Are you sure? He's just going to question that word that's inside you. So you come to these services, you come to youth services, you come to Second Mile, you come to whatever you come to, and you're hearing the word that's in you, and the enemy's going to come in, he's going to try and confuse that. He's going to try and question that word that God has given you. And then the enemy's going to deny the word, and he's going to present a compromise. And this is what's dangerous. He's going to present a compromise. He's going to try and give you another option of something else you should turn to. It says, then the serpent said to the woman, this is in verse 4, you will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God. You will know good and evil. Surely you won't die. Surely you're going to eat this, and you'll be okay. You're not going to die. And listen, then your eyes are going to be open. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. This is going to work out for your benefit. This guy's smooth. It says a snake. He's cunning of all the animals. He's just cunning. He's smooth. He's coming in. And here's what happens is, in any of these two points, she hasn't turned to God. She had access to God. Adam said he walked in the cool day with God. I mean, God, they have the opportunity to turn to God. But now she's just letting it kind of linger. She's kind of contemplating it. She's kind of thinking, well, what if I do eat it? What if I don't die? What if I'm okay? What if I'm okay to go do this? Maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was. Maybe I didn't hear God right. They were allowed to eat of anything, and they had dominion over everything but one tree. One. Everything but one. And then he came in and got them to turn to that one thing. There was one thing, and he got them to turn to that one thing. He'll tempt you with something that seems good. He'll tempt you with something that appears to be good. In verse 6, So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, not evil, not bad. When she saw the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave it to her husband with her, and he ate. She was drawn to the good of the tree, not the evil. She wasn't saying, God, I'm not listening to you, I'm done with it. She was drawn to the good of the tree. The enemy's smooth. He's going to let you see the good in what this broken sin. I know it's broken, but I'm telling you, you're going to feel good for a little while. This relationship will make you feel good for a little bit. Man, if you just go after success all out and you find success, it's going to make you feel good for a little bit. He wants you to turn to something that's not God. He wants you to turn to something that's broken. That's what he does. But he wants you to see it as good. He doesn't want you to see it as, oh, you're not turning to God. You're okay. Just do your thing. Do what you're doing. Because why? Because he's wily. Because he's not going to straight up just tell you, hey, I want you to turn from God. Hey, I want you to quit living for God, and I want you to go do what I have for you. He's not. He's got strategies. He's wily. John chapter 4, starting in verse 7. Here's what the word says. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink, for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. It's like, hey, we're not supposed to be interacting here. Jewish people don't talk to Samaritans. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. There it is, living water. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then can you get this living water? She goes straight to like her physical senses. She's like, I'm looking at you. You ain't got no bucket, and the water's deep. How are you actually going to get me some living water? Because she's not thinking spiritually at this moment. She's not thinking, she's just thinking physically. You don't have a bucket. How are you going to make this happen? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock? Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. Will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water. I want it. Like what you're talking about is what I need. I don't want to drink water and feel thirsty, you know, a short time after, want to turn to something else. It's like she's starting to get it. She's starting to get, I want this living water. I want this thing that's going to spring up on the inside of me forever. Forever. Do you get it? When we turn to God, he's the forever answer. He's better. He's what we need. He's a living water. He's not a broken cistern. So it goes on to say, Jesus said, Go call your husband and come here. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you have well said, I have no husband. For you have had five husbands, and the woman you have is not your husband, in that you spoke truly. Here's what I love about Jesus. Jesus knew who he was talking to. He knew that he was talking to a woman from Samaria who isn't from his side of the street, let's just say, who isn't someone they normally interact with. He knew that, and he still offered her living water. Jesus also knew that she'd been married five times. He also knew that she was living with somebody that wasn't her husband, and that did not matter. He still offered her living water. Do you realize that that's the answer? He wants to give us living water. He doesn't care about your past or your current circumstances. He's not looking at that. What he's looking at is giving you the answer, giving you this living water. So I think so often we just see the five failed marriages and we see them living with somebody else and we kind of just, nah, you know what? I guess they don't want what I have to offer. They need it. We need this living water. It doesn't ever end. We don't ever quit needing the living water. So here's this woman and he knew it. Jesus was showing us an example. He went to a woman who had a past. Man, not only a past, but currently wasn't doing what was right. And he still offered her living water. We serve a God who loves us. We serve a Jesus who is about grace, who is about giving us opportunity. It doesn't matter the mistakes we have made. So if you've disqualified yourself, please stop. And if you're in here and you've been trying to reach somebody and you've disqualified them, please stop. Jesus did not disqualify. All he did was qualify. All he did was say, you know what? I have living water. All you have to do is ask and I'm going to give it to you. That's it. That's all she had to do was ask. It didn't matter her circumstance. He could have gone to a Pharisee. He could have gone to a priest and he could have offered them living water, but that's not what he did. That wasn't the example he set for us. The example he set for us was he went to someone who was broken. He went to someone who'd been trying all these different things. They had tried about four or five or six different broken cisterns and realized she couldn't hold water, that nothing was working. And he said, I have living water. I have living water, and it's never going to run out. You'll never thirst again. That's the heart of God, that we get to a place where we turn to him, and we'll never thirst again. We'll never have need to turn to anything broken again that can't hold water. Why? Because he's the source. He's the source of living water. Everything that you need is found in God. But I'm telling you, the enemy's smooth. He'll get you to think otherwise. He'll get you to think there's another way. There's something else. He'll just get you to divert your eyes for a minute, for a moment. And he wants you to get focused on a broken cistern. And he's thinking, and he wants to tell you that that's your answer. That woman thought, if I can find the right husband, I'm going to be content. If I can find the right husband, if I can just be with the right person, I'll be okay. Well, she was 0-6. And Jesus didn't care. He didn't care that she was 0-6. All he cared about was that she was going to find the answer, that she was going to find the living water. She was going to find what she truly was looking for. She didn't know how to find it. She was trying to look in other things. She thought, if I could just find the right guy, I'm going to be okay. No, she needed Jesus. She needed the living water, and he offered it to her freely. Though she wasn't from where he was from, and though she was, let's just say, living in sin, he didn't care. He offered her living water. Let us do the same. John chapter 7, starting in verse 37, says this. It says, on the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out. I love that Jesus stood up and he cried out. So in the midst of everybody, he gets a little rowdy. And he said this, he said, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Everybody say anybody. Everybody say anybody. If anybody thirsts, if anyone thirsts, if anybody has need of this water I'm talking about, he literally qualified everybody by saying anyone. Qualified everybody. If anyone. He didn't say, you know what, if you're really rich, or if you're poor, or if you're down and out, or if you have everything you've ever needed. He said, if anyone thirsts. And he cried out. And I love that he cried out. Why? Because if you think about being a parent, if you can put yourself in that mode, if you're not, and your kid, let's just say, is walking to the street, and you see there's a car coming. My son's name is CJ. I'm not just going to go, hey CJ, watch out. There's a car coming, buddy. No. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cry out. I'm going to cry and say, CJ, hey, there's a car. Watch out. That's what Jesus was doing. He was standing up and he was crying out. He's saying, if anyone, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've come from. It doesn't matter what you've done wrong. If you're thirsty, come to me and you'll never thirst again. Isn't that an amazing God? Isn't that an amazing Jesus that he loved us so much that he qualified everyone? And he said, all you got to do is turn to me. All you got to do is ask for this living water. If you knew who was talking to you, you would ask me for living water. I would have gave it to you and you would have never thirsted again. That's it. We just got to ask. That's it. That's the answer. As we turn to God, we quit turning to something broken. We quit turning to something that can't hold water. It can't. Whether it's good or bad, that doesn't matter. Man, that we turn to God. That every opportunity we get, every time, every chance we get, every time somebody comes up, something comes up, that we turn to God. On that last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. He places that on the inside of us. Why? To reach more people. His heart is that none would thirst, that people wouldn't go thirsty. Man, they may run into you and you have rivers of living water on the inside of you. And man, all we get to do is disperse that. But this he spoke concerning the Spirit, whom those believing in him would receive. For the Holy Spirit was not yet given because Jesus was not yet glorified. So when Jesus went up to heaven and he ascended into heaven, he left us the Spirit, the helper, the comforter. We can do more now because we have the Spirit on the inside of us. Like, I hope you get that. I hope you realize that he's placed something in you that if you've given your life to God, that no one else has. And that's living water. Like, you're not going to thirst anymore. Let's share that. Man, let's give that living water to other people. Let's don't hold it inside. If I have the ability to help you because you keep turning to something that can't satisfy, it's a broken cistern. It's cracked. It can't hold water. The only thing that can is Jesus. He's the living water. Man, he's left his Spirit for us. Please remember that. Please don't deny that. Please don't turn to anything else. So let me finish with this question. What are the broken cisterns in your life? What are the things that you maybe sometimes turn to, or you have turned to even recently, or maybe it's been a while, but you keep turning to this one thing, and you know there's no hope, and you even know that it's cracked, and you know that it's not going to hold water, but for some reason, the enemy is cunning, and he's smooth, and he keeps drawing you back to that. It's not that you're denying God. It's not that you're saying, I don't love God, but you just keep being drawn to this thing that's broken. You keep thinking, maybe it's going to work this time. Maybe it'll fulfill me a little more this time. Realizing, and let me just help you, it doesn't. It does not change. It does not, it will not fill you. The only thing that can is Jesus. And it reminds me of that message. God is better. God is better. Whatever this broken cistern is over there, I need you to realize this morning that God is better. That he has the answer that you're looking for. He has the peace. He has the hope. He has the love. He has the joy. Everything you're looking for, you can find in him.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more information about this message and others, please visit gutschurch.com.